Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. Today we'll be hearing three local authors read from some of their recent work. Consider it a holiday break from all the political developments we've been swimming in for the past few weeks. All of these writers have been interviewed individually on the program in the past. We'll hear from novelist Dana Spiota, poet and lyric essayist Christopher Citro, and poet Philip Memmer. I hope you'll enjoy these and have a great holiday weekend. Dana Spiota is a fiction writer and the author of five novels. She's a professor of English at Syracuse University. Among her many accolades, she's been a finalist for the National Book Award for Eat the Document, and Lightning Field was named a notable book by the New York Times. She's also been the recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and the John Updike Prize from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Here, she reads from her most recent novel, which is set in Syracuse, entitled Wayward. It has just been released in paperback.
Wayward by Dana Spiota, 2017. One way to understand what had happened to her, what she had made happen, what she had insisted upon, it began with the house. It was the particular house, but it was also where the house was and where she discovered she wanted to be. It was a rundown, abandoned arts and crafts cottage in a neglected, once vibrant neighborhood in the city of Syracuse. The house sat high on a tiny lot on Highland Street, which ran atop a hill that bordered a long expanse of grass and trees. It looked like a small sloping park, but it was actually a cemetery, the old graves scattered across the rise. Unless you were squeamish about graves, Sam wasn't. The sloping green hill was quite pretty. Highland itself offered a wide view of downtown. You could see the steeples of churches, and you could see how the small city was in a valley surrounded by hills. You could even see the kidney shape of Onondaga Lake, although it was often partly obscured by low-hanging clouds. If you turned your head to the left, or if you looked out the side windows of the house, you could see Syracuse University up on another hill. You would locate it by the quilted low white bubble of the Carrier Dome, named for the nearly absent Carrier Corporation. All that remained were a handful of jobs, the dome, and Carrier Circle, a treacherous traffic roundabout that Sam hated. Soon after you spotted the dome, you would notice the various spired and turreted campus buildings. The decision to leave her husband, the act of leaving, began the moment she made an offer on the house. It was a Sunday. Sam woke up at 5 a.m., unable to continue sleeping. She attributed this unnecessarily early waking to the approach of menopause. Her period still came each month, but odd things had started changing in her body, even her brain. One of which was suddenly becoming awake at 5 a.m. on a Sunday, her mind shaking off sleep with unnegotiable clarity, as if she had already drunk a cup of coffee. And just as with coffee, she felt alert, an adrenal burst, but she could also feel the fatigue underneath it all, the weariness. That morning, the wood floor was cold against her bare feet, but she couldn't find her slippers. It was still dark. She tried not to wake her husband. She used her phone to illuminate the way to the bathroom. She peed, flushed, washed. She brushed her teeth without looking in the mirror. She pushed up the blinds to peek outside. The sky was gradually lightening with the dawn, and half a foot of snow had fallen overnight. It was one of those Syracuse March snow dumps. Everyone complained because it should be spring. But why say that when it was never spring in March in Syracuse? Besides, snow in March was often spectacular because of the spring light. The sunrise that was creeping up now cast a pink and gold glimmer, and a little crust of ice on top of the snow glittered from the sky and from the street lamps. The trees, the roofs of the houses, even the salt-crusted cars looked beautiful. And like most spectacularly beautiful effects, it was almost too much, too dramatic, nearly lurid. Sam loved the drama of a March snow. March meant the sky would be bright, blindingly bright, not the cloudy darkness of January or the dingy gray monotony of February, the worst month. As the day progressed, sharp shadows would be cast across the snow crust. Your eyes would squint from the brightness, and with no wind, you might unzip your coat. Syracuse in these moments could be a Colorado ski slope. March was different because the light brought the promise of spring and the snow made everything lovely, freshly covered and pristine. But here was the important part. Sam figured that she was the only person on Earth who thought March snowstorms were wonderful, and this made her feel a bit proud of herself. Always she liked to imagine herself as subtly different from everyone else, enjoying the tension and mystique of being ordinary on the surface, but with a radical, original interior life. For example, back when Sam used to shop the sales at the Talbots and DeWitt with the other suburban ladies of her class and age, she separated herself. Sure, Sam had discovered that the classic A-line or sheath dresses made of solid colored pont knits were so forgiving, so flattering, that tragic word, to a grotesque midlife misshapenness, a blurriness, a squareness, really. But despite being there and shopping because of an insider email blast notification of a super sale, Sam believed that she was different from the other women. Inside, she was mocking the calibrated manipulations, mocking herself, noting the corporate branding and lifestyle implications of the preppy styles and colors. The classic plaids, the buttons on the sleeves, the ballerina flats, evoking a tastefully understated sensibility. It even occurred to her that the other woman could be having the same interior thoughts and that the idea of conformity, at least in modern America, was never consciously sought after. No one older than a teenager thought, I want this because everyone else has it. No, Sam knew that you were sold the idea that you could be independent-minded even as you bought what everyone else bought. You were allowed to keep a vain and precious sense of agency. This was the very secret to consumerism working in a savvy, self-conscious culture. Her sense of resistance was as manufactured as her need to buy flattering clothing. Nevertheless, Sam also believed that her having such self-critical, self-reflexive thoughts as she shopped set her apart from the other women, surely. So she still believed herself to be, however stealthily, an eccentric person, not suited to conventions of thought or sensibility. Lately, this desire to be contrary to convention had taken on a new urgency, well beyond clothes or matters of taste. An unruly, even perverse inclination animated her. It had been looking for a place to land, for something to fasten on. So now, not before, this odd inner state pushed her toward a highly destabilizing wildness, a recklessness that she couldn't suppress any longer.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and this week we're featuring local authors reading from recent works. Our next guest is Christopher Citro. Christopher is a poet, lyric essayist, and fiction writer. He's the author of If We Had a Lemon, We'd Throw It, and Call That the Sun, and The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy. He's won a Pushcart Prize for Poetry and a Creative Nonfiction Award from the Florida Review. Christopher has taught at Syracuse's Downtown Writers Center and the Martha's Vineyard Institute of Creative Writing.
I'm reading recent poems from the manuscript in progress of my third book, whose working title right now is The New Avenues, The Only Avenues We Have. This first poem is called Our Breaths, Our Weather. Waking up, yes, again, just to have some part of the planet, which is what you are, wrap itself around me. To live in that hope. To have so many bad feelings pushed back in their own faces just by you putting your arm around my neck. The sun has no intention of coming out today. We're on our own. The neighbors across the street sitting around a tin of sardines trying to warm their knuckles. A truck passes. We assume huge government conspiracies, but not about helping us get by. A shadow moon orbiting beside the historical moon. It's an empty Mylar bag containing all of our secrets. Here, you can have them. We're light as whispers, floating at the top of the stairs. We hold one another primarily to keep from drifting away. I forgot to buy you handmade truffles from the boutique downtown where the men sleep on the sidewalks in the ice. I can hear you banging cupboards in another room. There are four doors to this house, all of which are locked. The outside handles cold, inside warm. This is called That's Me When That's You. The sun has come out again, and you've noticed. I've noticed you noticing. And the city has all this asphalt across muddy floors where forests once were. Tufted grasses. A stream you could set a leaf on. Place a pebble in the leaf. When my arms tire canoeing, I joke we should bring a sheet to lift at the wind, and you make the sound of laughter, which is better than silence, if actual laughter isn't an option. Remember that afternoon when you read to me as I lay on the floor with my head on a pillow in the sun? 80s ambient music, something about postcards in the title, and I thanked you, trying to explain how it made my brain, words like meditation, standing wave. I try so hard to pin these moments like a dog with its mouth around another's, both frozen, eyes to the distance, wandering at this strange dance we find ourselves in. When you crush the coriander we grew ourselves, rinse rain from a plate of basil and rosemary. You know how little kids will pound the ground with whatever's in their hands? This is called Flavor Fest Sparkle Supreme Seascape Eversweet. I can't remember the words. Something about lifting your cup of light to mine, a new sun switching on between us. It was good however it went. I slipped it into your phone case. I'll still be asleep. You're preparing for work. I want you to think of this, passing strip malls with their signs removed so they're just holes where the plates once fit, holes where power cords came through, halos where dirt caught around the plastic. How does dirt get up there? Does it actually fall on us? Things are getting worse, they say. I don't remember them having gotten better since last time they got worse. A blue tarp over the back of a drugstore lights the pavement Pacific, Atlantic, Arctic. I'm listing oceans it makes me think of. Sea animals shaped like a funnel, with other animals inside, taking refuge, or being eaten. Last night, let's agree to call it midnight, I went to swat a spider with America's Most Complete Seed and Nursery Catalog. As I swung the strawberries at the wall, the thing jumped out over my right shoulder. I lost it against the carpet pattern. The blossoms I walk across to get to you. This is called If Alone Has a Flavor. Some sort of tinned fish? Check. Udon noodles ready in 5 minutes? Check. The peanut oil? Yes. Sesame seeds shaken like snow? Oh, yes. And sea salt from a small caddy in flakes. Sun packed inside like energy in atoms. It won't end. What won't end? This life we feel's always about to end. Waking at night, sensing how hard the bed, how small the heart and its beating. An ongoing action. Inside, like a weevil in a nut, the idea it won't rain tonight. All these mouths open at the sky, getting nothing but starshine It tastes of winter mint. But you knew that. And this poem is called The New Avenues, The Only Avenues We Have. There were some of us going to become musicians, some standing in the blue dark beneath lake trees as stars emerged. Some of us, I don't know what some of us were thinking, for proof the lives we've led since then. I'm learning the creaks of this new house, grow a neuron for each new one. The cat helps. The snow on the hill lights up this side. By night, dark shapes pass across the ground. Sure, deer, but also something more uncertain. If I shut a cupboard, they stop. If I'm very still, they move on. Some evening we were all sitting around a picnic table in a park talking about what we always seemed to have time to talk about, amazed by each other's presence. My brain dough cookie cut each time one of you opened your mouth. Everyone I've ever met in life, I've compared to you and found lacking. Here, new friend, take my hand. We don't trust one another yet. Message me, and maybe we'll meet for a drink. My feelings come in shapes. Stairs on the outside of an apartment complex. Mossy river stones.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And on today's program, we're featuring local authors reading from recent works. Our final guest is the poet, Philip Memmer. Philip is the author of 5 volumes of poetry, the most recent being titled Pantheon. His awards include the Idaho Prize and the Adirondack Literary Award. Philip founded the Downtown Writers Center and is the director of the arts branch of the YMCA of Greater Syracuse.
Hi, I'm Philip Memmer, and I'm going to read some excerpts from a new book of poems coming out this fall called Cairns. Cairns tells a new version of the Sisyphus story. The character Sisyphus, if you're not familiar with him, was a king in ancient Greece who was known for bad behavior towards both humans and the gods, and was punished in Hades by having to push a large boulder up a mountain for all eternity. Every time he would get near the top of the mountain, the boulder would fall down, and he would have to start all over again the next day. The poem begins with an epigraph from Albert Camus' essay, The Myth of Sisyphus. It reads, "If this myth is tragic, that is because its hero is conscious." Cairns. In recognition of my life, the gods provided me in death this mountain, this stone, and forever. We all get that. But what good would forever be without a mountain, a stone? Sisyphus, the stone whispers, are you awake? All day its weight tears my limbs. All night it whispers in my ear, so that if I dream, I dream of the sorrows of stones. No, I say, I'm sleeping. True, I angered the gods, and I've learned what mortals say, my toil pointless, a fate to avoid. But to be a god's concern is to be a god. Your fates are just like mine, but mine I earned. When I despair, the stone reminds me how once this path was flat, a blackened plain, how someone spent their own sad forever to build rock on rock this peak. That was me, I remind the stone. Sisyphus asks the stone, are you awake? I dreamt, I say, that I pushed a stone up a mountain. I hope I wasn't heavy the stone replies. It wasn't you, I say. It was some other stone. My fate, some say, is an absurdity. Well, whose isn't? In the ski lift chairs above me, perdition's couples always learn too late they hate each other. There is no snow. They have no skis. Without someone to bear it, what is a burden anyway? Call me your stone, wails my stone. Sure stone, I pant, shoving it onward. No, whimpers my stone. I want you to call me your stone. Once, at its request, I stepped in front of the stone, relaxed my long, cramped limbs, and waited for it to push me. And waited. I'm sorry, said the stone. I'd hoped. So did I lied. So did I. Listen, when I'm nearly at the top, beyond earshot of all you there on the ground, the stone cries out, as if it is human, as if someone else's hell is to be the weight I push. The stone falls and comes to rest amidst those souls condemned to watch my failures. Another botch, they sigh, and wander off. For my long and dark walk down, nobody stays. No one waits but the stone. Every morning, the weight of the stone feels unbearable. Every day, I bear it and bear it and bear it. Light fails and the stone slips and I bear it. Night falls and I'm still this and I bear it. Sometimes, if no one's around but children, I juggle their stones with mine before I climb on. Sometimes, at the top of a cliff, I heave my stone over my head, eclipsing death's weak sun. Atop the mountain, the gift shop and scenic car park are packed as always. Kids bicker, parents curse flat tires. The stone falls. We all stare. I still can't tell whether they're in my hell or I'm in theirs. Flowers rise through the flames, stems scorched, parched lips open, as if even flowers sin and must atone. Even bees. One sip at a blossom's scalding well, and they flare like matches. All things have a hell. Sometimes, however strong I feel, the stone won't budge. Never mind that the gods demand this labor. Never mind ages of the same blunt shove, the same hard shouldering. The stone won't sometimes. Just won't. Sisyphus, the stone asks, are you awake? We need to talk, it continues, about tomorrow. There is no tomorrow, I say, just more todays. In that case, the stone says, let's talk about today. Sometimes, in hell's pale sham of a dawn, I stare a long while at the stone. The stone, too, stares at me. We turn away from each other. We sit. Hours pass. These days, more than most, I know I am damned. Sisyphus asks the stone, what is my name? How bare then my bloody hands seem, how stifling the air, how high the mountain, how heavy, heavy my companion. Stone, I answer. Your name is Stone. Stones shaped like bread for hunger, stones carved by waves for thirst, for loneliness, stone faces, stone words. Eat, drink, listen if you must. If you want to last, though, you'll have to learn to let the stones be stones. We manage again the summit. Almost. The view is what it is. Dim forests, dimmer clouds. Below us somewhere crowds of the suffering. How unlike them we are, the stone says, and falls. Thank you.
That was Philip Memmer, Christopher Citro, and Dana Spiota. You've been listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations and readings in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio. Assistant producer is Jacqueline Witwicky, and the program is edited by Mark Lefonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.